Jared and Shireen, County 10's morning show, and Coffee Time and Renee Shell with Game and Fish is joining us every couple of weeks. We get a chat with Renee. We have some great topics today, and we are going to start with CWD, which prevalence in the area. Can you talk about this more?
Yeah, so I really want to highlight, it's called the Project Herd, and folks might be familiar with that name or they may not, but it's Deer Hunt Areas 157 and 171, and that's north of Riverton and then kind of on up to Crowheart. So it encompasses a lot of tribal lands and then a lot of private lands. This isn't a herd that we've done a lot of management with, but we do co-manage it with the tribes. We work together to do that, and so that's been a success. A lot of folks know probably with our CWD monitoring over the last 5 to 10 years, we've sort of moved around the state sampling different herds. Well, we started CWD sampling in this herd unit intensively in 2019. And we discovered then that the prevalence rate is really high in this herd, again, called the Project Herd. We now have collected samples in 2019 where the rate that year was 60%. And that is, I should say, when I'm talking here, we focus on male mule deer because they have the highest rate in all of the herd units across the state. So we see a lower prevalence in the females, regardless of species, and a lower prevalence in whitetails. So just know when I'm saying these numbers that I'm going to be talking about the mule deer bucks. So we saw a 60% rate in 2019, similar in 2020, and then 2021, if we just take the data from 2021, which was about like in the low 40s for sample size, it ended up being a 78% positive rate, which is high, but we really need to look at a better sample size. So that's why we're aiming to get 200 samples. We're at about 180 right now for mule deer bucks. At that 180 over these 3 years, we have a prevalence rate of 65%. That's the highest in the state. So because of that, and because we found this out in 2019, we've been working on a project where we're hoping to collar 40 mule deer in this area. And we really see a lot of it. Honestly, we struggle to get some samples in this herd unit. And we have seen a lot of these deer come out of, it seems like, a few hot spots. And so we're going to try to get a better handle on that. 40 collars, that's a lot more than we would normally collar in a deer population, but we really need to find out where these deer are moving, if they're congregating, which you can't do without a lot of collars, because we think things like congregation may be a part of this high rate of transmission. So at that point, when we're able to overlay kind of the movements, the habitat use, the congregation, we'll be able to look at maybe some management tools to try to reduce CWD. And, you know, just to kind of let folks know, all sorts of things are out there for ideas, and nobody in the world really knows how to best manage CWD keep prevalence low. You know, one thing that's been brought up is like a high harvest on the bucks, because, again, they tend to have a high rate of prevalence. So,
and it's not as prevalent in elk, correct?
It's not. Yeah, you're right. But I should say there are some herds sort of in the southeast part of the state that have a higher prevalence. And they've been in those herds longer. So that's kind of where we tend to see that. But you're right. The elk, even in these same areas, don't seem to have that high prevalence that the deer do. There just isn't the commingling as much, which is great.
Hunters play a very important role in trying to manage and find out more about how we can reduce the prevalence of it.
Yeah, samples are such a big deal, and we'll be looking for more samples in this area and other areas this year. And even, you know, this time of year, most hunting seasons are over, but in these areas where we do have a lot of private land, if folks are finding dead deer, two things. Number one, they can still dispose of them for free at the landfill, so don't forget about that. But also, we want to know about it. So before you haul that deer off to the landfill, if you'd like it off your property, which is a good idea in case it has CWD, also a good idea to wear gloves. But we'd like to know in case we want to come take a sample, or just so we can sort of keep tabs on, you know, how many of these deer may be dying.
Do you see calls from just in-town folks that maybe see a sickly looking deer as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And often if those deer go ahead and die, or if we have to put them down, we do end up taking, we always pretty much always take CWD samples if we get our hands on a deer. And then sometimes with town deer, there are other sicknesses going on, and so we might send parts off to the lab to get a better idea. And a lot of times the town deer tend to just have like a high parasite load, often from, this is going to sound odd and I'll try to make the connection, but often from eating non-natural food sources. They're not maybe getting the parasites from those food sources, but because they're not supposed to eat, like we talked about pumpkins, right? Or bird seed. We'll talk about that in a little bit. They're not supposed to eat these food sources. It compromises their immune system. And so where they could have maybe fought off some...
That makes sense.
Yeah. Some bacterias or some parasite loads, they can't anymore and they succumb to that. So good question.
Well, we will be getting a check-in, of course, with Renee Schell with Wyoming Game and Fish. Let's move on to Christmas tree disposal, because I've been curious on whether or not Game and Fish is going to be a part or have their annual, is it a Christmas tree throw it in Ocean Lake Day?
Yeah, it's something like that. So this actually, the quick answer is it's not happening, but I'll explain lots and you can still dispose of your trees for free. So we'll get to all that. This started as a volunteer project. It started from a group of fishermen who said, hey, we want to provide structure for fish that we can fish around. So they were really enthusiastic. We have lost, just over time, this has been going on for a lot of years, we've just lost a lot of that volunteer base from those fishermen who were using the structures. So what we find now in the last years is that we don't have fishermen wanting to fish around the Christmas trees. So what the Christmas trees did is we would, you know, people would dispose of their live trees at the landfill. Solid waste has been huge in this, and solid waste would help us kind of bundle them all up, get them out to Ocean Lake. We would wire them to cinder blocks, and then when the ice melted, it would go through the ice and provide structure where fish congregated. At Ocean Lake, this doesn't really help them biologically. It helps the fishermen know where to find a whole bunch of fish, which is fine, which is great. But what's happened also in the last years is that we get more complaints about people getting their lines snagged. They're getting really mad about it. And so without kind of the volunteer base pushing it, knowing that maybe people are not using these structures as much, it seems like folks aren't requesting the waypoints for where they are anymore.
Makes sense.
And folks are calling and complaining. So we're not going to do the Christmas trees on Ocean Lake. People can still dispose of their Christmas trees for free at the landfill, and the landfill will take care of them. But again, live trees without ornaments and tinsel.
Yes, please.
Yeah, please.
Well, speaking of Ocean Lake, let's talk about some ice fishing.
Yeah. Well, early ice is great. I think at Boyson, there's open water. I'll go up to where I know right now in Du Bois, like Torrey Lake has been fishing great. I think there's been a lot of trout action up there, rainbow trout, really fast action through the ice. So that's a place if you want to hit some thicker ice that feels a little bit safer. Early is good fishing for walleye down here at Ocean Lake and Boyson, but be so careful. The winds we've had, you guys, just make such a difference in that ice thickness, even within a day, that maybe, or even within a few hours that you're out on the ice. So use lots of caution.
How about Ocean Lake?
Yeah, so we have a lot of people fishing for walleye out there. And then, you know, what people used to fish for around these structures of Christmas trees are crappie. And so that could be something if you want. And those trees still are there at the bottom, and they take a few years to deteriorate. And so that's kind of out on the Long Point area. If there's safe ice there, it could be a good place for some ice fishing.
They have a really great benefit fishing derby that is coming up on the 14th. And I was really, you know, crossing my fingers to make sure that they were set on ice because, you know, the temps and the wind, like we had just talked about.
So. Yeah, they were worried about picking a date as well, knowing like they have to submit their paperwork and select a date. And would they have the ice? So yeah, I'm hoping it holds for them. And these cold temperatures should have helped.
Well, we're talking with Renee Schell, Wyoming Game and Fish. How about bird feeding? A lot of people like and enjoy feeding the birds.
We are often talking about not feeding animals, and that's still appreciated, except for birds are a okay thing to feed. I have some like kind of tips and tricks, and then even some ideas of things you can make and put together to sort of help feed them. One thing that they need a little bit more in the winter is like a suet, a little bit more fat to get them through. So you see those suet blocks and things, those are okay to feed. Sometimes hard to keep away from the squirrels. I have a lot of fat squirrels at my house. Even though I have squirrel-proof feeders, they seem to, they seem to get through them. Supplemental feeding can actually really help our bird population. If you haven't started feeding and you're just hearing this and thinking, I want to get into bird feeding, or yes, I need to put my feeders out, don't be discouraged if you don't have birds right away. So when birds are selecting their winter feeding site, it's like September, October. So if you didn't have feeders out then, the birds may just be slower to find your feeders. Also, if you were feeding all summer, keep feeding in September and October if you want to feed in the winter, because they'll select your site as kind of their winter feeding location. If at any time, whether it's winter or summer, you decide you want to stop feeding or you're going to go on vacation and you know you won't be able to feed for a while, it's really best if you can taper off the feed so that it doesn't just disappear overnight. They rely on it more than you know. If you have a good like sunny kind of south side to place your feeders, that's great. If you have the ability to have water for them that doesn't freeze, or that you can kind of replace on a daily basis, water is pretty key for them as well this time of year. It's really good. They like to go to sleep, especially with this cold that we've had. They like to go to sleep with full bellies and wake up with a meal right away. So
don't we all?
Yeah, I know. That's what I was thinking. Me too. So make sure they kind of have that feed in the afternoon, and then again that next morning. Keep feeders away from like the deer in particular. Bears will get into feeders too. Is they'll either get like one of those long hooks you see sometimes in department stores when they hang the, you know, clothing up high, and they'll hang it high in a tree, or they'll put up like a big line across their yard, a really high line, and they'll use kind of like a pulley system to hang their feeders.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, and it sounds like a ton of work, but if you like to feed the birds, you probably also like to, you know, conserve other wildlife. And so keeping the feed away from the deer and keeping them healthy is really important. Cleaning your feeders regularly. This is something that I admit I'm not good at and I need to get better at. Even setting a reminder like first of the month or last day of the month. Feeders can harbor so much disease, even things like conjunctivitis, which is pink eye, which is crazy. And then like fungal spores and things that can kill birds. So like a 1-9 part bleach to water solution to clean your feeder, and then, you know, wait till it's completely dry to kind of fill it again and put it back up. If folks are looking for some fun things to put out for the birds, so one thing they like is like just when you, and you can use popcorn, but just how you kind of do the cranberry and popcorn for your Christmas tree. You can string that along. You can put cranberries. You can put grapes. They love grapes. You can put popcorn on there that is not seasoned, so don't buy the Orville popcorn.
Or buttery.
Yeah, don't put that on. On a, you know, some kind of heavy duty thread, apple, any kind of like dried fruits. They love that stuff. Put, you know, hang that up in the tree, again, away from other wildlife. You can make your own bird cakes if you don't want to buy them, or some people will take peanut butter on a pine cone. And
that's what I was gonna say, the YO100 Inspire a Kid checklist has make a pine cone bird feeder on there. So I was gonna ask you, is what do I put with my nephew on there to make?
Yeah, so you get peanut butter and you smear it kind of all over the pine cone with a knife usually, and then I will roll that in bird seed.
And then you just hang it up. Perfect.
And they love it. It gives them the fat and gives them the bird seed at the same time. You can do the same thing. You could roll it in oats or make like a mash of like a ball that you could hang up as well. So, yeah.
Great. Well, we're going to try to check that off our YO100 checklist here.
Perfect.
Yeah, which we've been doing. So the last thing I wanted to ask you about, the mountain lion capture in a lander. We've had a few texts about it. Can you talk more? I know it had been spotted and then captured and released.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such, I feel like, an exciting success story. Do look for more later this week. I think on the Game and Fish Instagram and Facebook pages, we'll be putting out some more photos and video of the release as well.
Those are always cool, by the way.
I know.
Nature is metal.
Yeah, that's right. Yay. So she, it was a female lion. She was reported about a week ago now and I think she had even been spotted beforehand, but we didn't have that reported to us. in adjacent to City Park in Lander, Wyoming. So if you, McManus Park is just across the river from City Park. And so that's where she was spotted visually by someone. And then we went out on Wednesday to verify tracks. And honestly, I will say we get a lot of mountain lion sightings that end up being tabby cats. So we were sort of expecting that. It's a heavily used like walking path for people and dogs. And but sure enough, there were, you know, fresh lion tracks in there. It had snowed, I think, somewhat recently, at least enough to for us to see those tracks. And it looked like, you know, they kind of followed her tracks, and it looked like she disappeared onto some private land. So the land got in touch with the landowner, were able to set some traps for her, and also had found out that she made a kill of a deer. So she was really, by all accounts, minding her own business, right? Trying to make a living as a mountain lion. But the fact that she was in a residential area and a high, you know, high recreation, just not a good place for her to stay. And yeah, trying to avoid any conflicts in the future. So the first night the trap was set, nothing. And we have a little sensor on the trap. So we get an email alert as soon as the trap
is. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And I, you know, still go to check it every morning anyway. But didn't go in that first night. Second night, we thought there's no way with the fireworks, like maybe that'll just drive her out of town, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that was New Year's Eve. And sure enough, about 2:30 in the morning, get the email that she's, you know, the trap is closed. So still we're thinking like probably a skunk, probably, you know, something else. But sure enough, she was in there the next morning and our guys got her out of the, it's just like a live trap, like you would set for a raccoon or something. It's just a mountain lion size, real big. And then just like we do with other animals that we are going to relocate, we did put a collar on her. She did get multiple ear tags. So we have open lion season. So she has to get one tag that says do not eat, because the sedation that she gets wouldn't be good for humans if she were harvested. Weighed her. She weighed about 95 pounds. She was a year and a half, had never had kittens, so didn't show any signs of ever nursing. You can look at their teats and see that. And she was just the picture of health. So kind of waited, you know, worked her up. We can reverse, we give her two different drugs. We can reverse one of those, and then she has to metabolize the other. And once she was kind of up and ready to go, by that time she was already in a big culvert trap that we hooked to a truck and move her out. We were able to go release her well out of town, well, you know, away from livestock. And yeah,
I love to hear about the releases, you know, the ending being a release, which is
and
is
it's
always
so
nice.
Funny, you know, we opened the hatch, right? And she didn't immediately just jump out. She was a little, you know, she was, you know, checking things out. She kind of came out slowly and looked around and took
That's
her time.
Cool.
And then she took off. I'm out.
So you guys got a good look at her when she was awake, which is always awesome. Well, you're always a plethora of knowledge. I love it. Renee Shell, Wyoming Game and Fish. We'll talk here in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Shereen.